The smell of cut grass is one of the pleasures of summer, isn't it? And the feel of a cool lawn under your feet on a hot day, that's kind of nice too. But to make sure you have a healthy lawn to enjoy next summer, there is some work you need to do right now. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk, zeroing in on lawns with Doug Soldat. Doug's an associate professor of soil science at UW-Madison. Specializes in turf grass, and he has some great information to share with you and with me about caring for our lawns. If you have a question about your lawn, how'd your lawn do this summer, by the way? Mine didn't, frankly, didn't do very well. I didn't take a good enough care of it, but maybe yours fared better. Maybe you need to do some reseeding. I probably should. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or post, maybe you've got a photo of your terrible shaped lawn or your beautiful lawn. Post it on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, along with any questions that you might have. Doug Soldat, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Larry. It's good to be back.
Oh, man, it's great. Great to have you with us. This is an important time of the year for lawn care. One of the things to get done is maybe reseeding?
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on right now. This is the prime time for lawn care. You do everything from fertilizing, reseeding. We're not quite ready for weed control, but now is the time definitely to make some positive changes to your lawn.
How do you know if you need to reseed? Is it just patches that are...
Yeah, well, I think the way I like to look at it is any bare area that's, you know, the size of a dinner plate or bigger, you should think about reseeding that. Anything that died... The reason it died is probably because there's something wrong with the soil. So it's a good time to go in, add some compost, make some changes to the soil, and plant a grass that's going to survive there better for you next year.
Yeah, and thinking around the state from north to south, what's the timeline or time frame for getting that reseeding done?
We usually say anywhere between August 15th all the way through September 15th. And so, of course, that's really weather dependent. We could have started maybe as early as August 1st this year with that kind of cooler summer that we had. But right now, end of August, this is prime time. So this would be a great weekend to get some seed in the ground.
And I suppose the type of seed depends a little bit on your conditions, but are there some... How do we know what types of seed would be best?
Yeah, so what we learned from the drought last year is that Kentucky bluegrass is still a really, really good choice for a lot of our lawns. It has underground stems, so it creeps and it can fill in areas, and it did tolerate the drought better than most other grasses. I would actually flip that around and say, what grasses do you want to avoid? When you're looking at a grass label... there's going to be some marketing stuff. They're going to say sunny mix, shady mix. Try to ignore that. Flip it over and look at the back. You're looking for grasses with mixtures with high percentages of fine fescue and Kentucky bluegrass. The more the perennial ryegrass and the annual ryegrass, we want to keep those to a minimum. And the grass seed label will tell you right on there. So you flip it over. If it's got a lot of annual or perennial ryegrass, you probably want to avoid that.
Yeah. So that, because that's not going to...
It's the annual ryegrass. The name says it all. It's not going to make survive the winter. Perennial ryegrass, we have disease issues with it, and it tends to die a little bit more slowly than the annual ryegrass. But we really want to have Kentucky bluegrass and fine fescue in the components out of a lot of lawns.
Are there mixes that don't have any ryegrass?
Yeah, you can find them. They're hard, though. Ryegrass is cheap seed. People like to add it in as a filler. You know, the lower the price, I can almost bet that there's going to be more of the ryegrasses in it. You can absolutely find grass with grass mixtures without the ryegrasses.
And so for reseeding, what do you do? How do you do it? Do you work the soil up a little bit?
Well, first of all, if the grass is dying in a certain patch but not around it, usually what we're seeing is there's probably going to be some sort of soil problem. So that'd be a great time to buy a bag or two of compost and really till that soil up and mix it up, loosen it, put down a starter fertilizer, put the seed down, rake it in, and tamp it down with your foot. Getting that, just putting it on the surface is going to basically ensure a failure. If you want good success, you got to have that seed mixed into the top quarter to half inch of that of that soil.
Okay. And then we can tell that we've had a success when we see the grass coming
when they
up.
Start popping up. Yeah. So the other thing you want to do is get some mulch. Usually straw mulch is a popular choice, but you don't want to bury it. When I go around this time of year, I see people using straw mulch and all you can see is the straw. You want to see about 50% soil, 50% straw. And that's when you have enough of that mulch.
Doug Soldat, our guest today, UW Extension Specialist in the Department of Soil Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. Join us at 800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page. You can post there as well at the Larry Mueller Show. Michael in Sheboygan, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have some severe coarse fescue, big clumps. How do I get rid of it?
Big clumps. I'm not familiar with horse fescue, but maybe
a real wide blade.
Yeah, it could be tall fescue. One of the hardest things about grass and diagnosing problems over the radio is identifying what it is. If you have a picture of it, something, you know, post it on the Facebook page or send it to me by email. But let's just assume it is tall fescue, which is a coarse bladed grass that clumps together. It's one of the growing problems in Wisconsin lawns because we're seeing more and more tall fescue sold as a seed. It can be a common contaminant of seed mixtures. The problem is there's no selective method to get rid of it with a chemical. You're looking at digging the plants out by hand, or using a non-selective herbicide and basically starting over. But
like Roundup or something?
Roundup and starting over. But this is a growing problem that we've been seeing more every year.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Roy in Milwaukee. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have been interested for years in the so-called no-mow grasses that grow so slowly that if you don't mind it being a little long, you supposedly don't have to mow it. And now for the first time, I've got a yard that basically needs significant rejuvenation, and I've thought of using it. It's up in northern Wisconsin in the Ashland area, and I wonder if you know much about those and if you think one of them would be suitable that far north.
Oh, yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, that sounds like a good option. Usually I say, well, be careful what you're getting into, because sometimes these grasses, they sound like a miracle. Low-mow, I'm in, right? But in reality, they're a collection of fine fescues, and they do grow relatively slowly, but they'll get, 6-8 inches, and they'll lay over. And so if you want anything that looks like a traditional lawn, it's not going to be the grass for you. But if this is a vacation place, you can only get up there every so often, it is actually a good choice. Does fairly well in the shade, does well in sandy soils, dry soils. It does poorest in wet conditions and where you have high traffic, which doesn't seem to be your choice. But so we kind of talked about reading the grass label. With a lower no-mow mix, you want to flip it over, look at the fine print, and you're looking for chewings, fescue, hard fescue, and strong creeping red fescue. Those are all very common components of those mixes that should do pretty well in your situation.
Okay, the soil is actually mostly clay.
Does it stay wet for large periods, or is it?
No,
I think drainage is pretty good.
Drainage is good.
Low spots, I suppose, when it that collects for a little while when it rains, but nothing that stays very long.
Yeah, they prefer sandy or more well-drained soils, but you can have success in a clay as long as it's not like a wetland or it's saturated for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a perfect choice.
Okay, thanks.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. You can join into it, 1-800-642-1234. Talking Lawns today with Doug Soldat from the UW-Madison. Great to have him along. And again, thank you for listening. Jay and Ellsworth, turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Doug, Larry. Say, I live in the country and I have a septic system with a drain field, and the drain field's on a slope. It's on a hill with kind of a clay soil, and I can't keep anything alive, grass, on that drain field. I mean, the weeds don't even do well there, and I'm just wondering if you had any ideas what a person could plant on a drain field or to put something to you know, I guess I don't want to mess with the drain field too much, you know, to cover it with more dirt. But what do you any suggestions?
Yeah, I agree. Don't mess with the soil properties there. Yeah, I have one suggestion. Anytime I hear the weeds won't grow there, that's a tricky situation. But I think this is a perfect situation to try tall fescue, which a previous caller talked about as being a clumpy weed. But if you plant tall fescue uniformly, it actually looks pretty good, and it is definitely our most hardy trouble. It does best in these really troublesome situations, and the only time it does poorly is where ice accumulates. So in this, with that slope, I don't see that being a problem. So try a mixture of at least 80% tall fescue or 100% tall fescue and plant that in, and I think that's your best chance for having grass on that.
Tall fescue. Okay. Would crown vetch work? Some people have crown vetch. Would that work?
So I don't have a ton of experience with the non-grass covers, but I mean, I know crown vetch is a really aggressive thing. It's definitely something you could try.
Prairie plants can work too. They take a little more work to get established, but once they're established, and there are mixes that are set up for just that kind of situation.
Okay.
Prairie Nursery would be an example of a place. There are other nurseries as well that have mixes that are designed for that kind of situation.
Those tough ones, yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Jim and Ashlyn, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm a descending voice on lawns. They're green deserts. And putting fertilizer and chemicals on lawns is one of the worst things we can do for our health and for the environment. Gradually, at my home, I'm replacing what was lawn with vegetable gardens, with native plants, and with rain gardens. And I think, Larry, you might have heard the expression green desert from someone we know up here in the Shawangan Bay area.
Well, Doug, you've heard that. Thanks, Jim, by the way.
Yeah.
You've heard that comment.
So this is a thing that's the University of Wisconsin Turfgrass Research Program has focused on for, you know, 40, 50 years, and that's what we're known for around the country, is studying the environmental impact of lawns. And it's actually quite a complex topic. And I don't think you can say that any management of a lawn is a negative thing. In fact, what we've found over those years of research is that some inputs are necessary to minimize the environmental impact. If you have a soil that's been and of course, there are many different, like you said, rain gardens. There's other alternatives that you can do, but to say that lawns cannot be an environmentally friendly component of the landscape, I think I'm going to have to disagree with you on that one. But that's a lot of what we do is looking at what are the ways to minimize environmental impact or to improve situations. So I'll just use some examples. That I'm familiar with. You go into an urban area, the house has been constructed, the soil's been completely degraded. You can put the wrong grass seed on top of that. It's not going to germinate. If you leave it there, you're going to have just a bare, compacted area. But if you work to fix that soil, put in the right grass, fertilize it 1 to 2 times a year to keep the density up and keep the bare spots out, you improve water infiltration, just like those rain guards are gardens are doing. And we've studied rain gardens for years and comparing them to the native grass prairie mixes that the DNR recommends to the standard Kentucky bluegrasses. And we find that if the soil in the rain garden's right, the grass can do similar or even better than the rain garden in minimizing the pollution. So it is a complex topic, and I'm glad you're interested in it. And we actually teach a class called Lawn Society and the Environment here at UW, where we tackle these tough issues.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks again, Jim, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Doug Soldat, our guest today, taking a look at your lawn on this edition of Garden Talk. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about your lawn or about lawns in general, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1000. 1-2-3-4. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Doug Soldat, UW Extension Soils Scientist and Turfgrass Expert. Rob in Appleton, your turn. Thanks for calling, Rob.
Hey, I guess I'm kind of tagging on to the guy that you just had on before the break there about using chemicals on your lawn that are maybe not beneficial for you or for pets. I started the experiment with worm castings, and I started to actually work for a company, started my own LLC, and I got hired by a larger company that makes worm castings, and now I'm their soil biologist. And a lot of people skip over the fact that there's this huge interconnectivity between all the organisms that we don't see in the soil. And you miss that with the synthetic fertilizers. And so I've had really good experience. I went from using worm castings on my garden to on my lawn, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a good point, Rob. I think, you know, that's definitely right in my specialty, and I study organic fertilizers every single year. We do trials with composts and different types of organic fertilizers. Wisconsin has all kinds of really good organic fertilizers that are produced locally, and we see the same thing. We see outstanding results. However, synthetic fertilizers, lawns are nitrogen heavy. They have a high demand for nitrogen. So high, in fact, that we're only, when you fertilize a lawn according to University of Wisconsin recommendations, you're only meeting 25-30% of that crop's nitrogen demand. So it's not, we don't think of it as we're saturating the system with nitrogen like might happen in some other system. So we're providing just a small amount of that. So what we've seen in our trials with synthetic versus organic is that the response of the grass and the soil too is related to the amount of nitrogen. So we don't make a distinction in terms of good or better between the organic and synthetic specifically, but we know that there's a lot of great organic fertilizers that can work just as well as their synthetic counterparts.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Rob, for calling. Keith in Dodgeville, your turn. Hi, Keith.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a reflection on the environmental impact of lawns. I live out in the country, and my front lawn, which is fairly large, is surrounded by prairie, and I had expected it to be a green desert. Turns out it's just the opposite, at least out here.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a magnet for birds, ground-feeding birds, bluebirds, and all the other critters, and I assume they're coming in to get at the bugs that they can't get at otherwise.
Yeah,
I fertilize it occasionally, but I haven't put any pesticides on it. But you know, we even get the red-headed woodpeckers that come in because they're ground feeders, and we get this time of year we get the swarms of the giant dragonflies coming in and mm-hmm. eating the hatches over the lawn. So I've been quite surprised at what an actual magnet it has been.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. And actually, there's a bunch of ecosystem ecological researchers who have documented exactly what you described, and they work with golf courses to ensure that the native areas are connected, so that the wildlife has a connected system where they can navigate through the golf course. But they also recognize that having these short turf areas enhances the biodiversity of the birds and the insects and the amphibians. So there's a lot of scientific literature out there that supports that that having these different types of landscapes in a small area is actually beneficial to the diversity of and it definitely goes along with what you're seeing. So if you say a green desert, I'm thinking for miles, you got green, it's probably not a good thing. But if you have these short mown grass areas in conjunction with prairie or woodland, I think that's going to be a good thing for the wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Tim in Green Bay next. Hi, Tim.
Hello. I was, I had a trouble with my lawn from last year's drought. I have a very sandy soil along the bay in Green Bay, and when my grass went dormant, the crabgrass took over. So I was
wondering two questions. What's a good way to prevent crabgrass, and how long till I can reseed after spraying? I did spray a Roundup to try to kill the crabgrass.
So you sprayed the Roundup recently?
Yes, I did.
Across the whole area?
Yes.
Okay. So reseeding right now is this the right time to do it? And then because you probably have such a large seed bank in the spring, you're going to want to make sure that you put down a crabgrass preventer. Now this probably won't be necessary every year, but what you're going to do to keep the crabgrass from coming out is to keep your lawn density high. And you're going to do that by fertilizing 2 to 3 times a year, and keeping it, irrigating it to keep the grass from going completely dormant. So when you do those things, you won't have to go in with a preventive crabgrass application year in and year out. But next year, you're absolutely going to want to consider that option. So the best timing to prevent crabgrass from germinating is when forsythia bushes are in full bloom. Those are those really bright yellow flowers in the shrubs you see around town. So that's when the soil temperatures are about 50 degrees Fahrenheit. That's about the time you want to put down a crabgrass preventer.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you, Tim, for calling. Phil in Green Bay. Hello.
Hello. Just wondering if the guest could talk a little bit about sod webworm, how to prevent it, how to get rid of it. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. Unfortunately, I haven't had a sod webworm question in a long time. I know that they're surface feeders, and you know, I'm going to have to refer you to Chris Williamson, our turfgrass entomologist here, because insects are, you really want to understand their life cycle and when they're coming up, and to have the best control. So a lot of times with the insect damage we see, it's too late to really do anything. And so with sod webworms, I'm just not confident enough to give you that recommendation right now. But send me an email or do something on a Facebook page, and I'll make sure we get you the most up-to-date info.
All right. There you go. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, the Facebook page there. You can post a question, and Doug will get back to you. Mike in Winona, Minnesota. Hi.
Yes, hello. Excuse me. I have a lawn here that I haven't worried too much about for 35 years, but over the last 5 years or so, I've used a mulching mower, and a plant or a weed that I call Creeping Charlie, I don't know what it's called, has kind of taken over, and I'm wondering, is this because of the mulching mower, and what can I do to control it? I don't like to use to put things on the lawn at all, but it's getting kind of bad.
Yeah, you got a lot of shade up there, Mike?
A lot of what?
Shade.
It's in the sunny areas as well.
Yeah. So this is ground ivy. Ground ivy is another common name for Creeping Charlie.
Okay.
And it's a plant that grows across the surface of the soil, mm-hmm. with runners, because kind of like a strawberry plant does. And it's absolutely probably the number one weed we have or the hardest one to control. And usually the reason is because Creeping Charlie or ground ivy thrives in the areas where the lawn doesn't. So, one thing I like to say is the best herbicide, the best prevention against weeds is a dense lawn. And the problem with ground ivy is that it thrives in areas where you just, no matter what you do, you're not going to have that type of density. So so it starts in the shady areas and it creeps out into the sunny ones. So when we have it in a full sun area, we can control it pretty easily with just keeping the density up, maybe an occasional herbicide application. But in these shady areas, it's a constant battle. Mulching mowing, bagging mowing, that's really not going to do much for you. I guess one thing for you to consider would be a chemical application every 3 to 5 years to whenever it hits that threshold that it's just too much for you. But there's not a lot you can do other than that to keep them.
And just in terms of lawn health, you and I have talked about this on the show in the past, and a mowing height for, you know, when you mentioned your mulching mower, I immediately wondered how high is that mulching or how low? Because a lot of times,
yeah,
we cut it too low.
Yeah, we. No, so we're go
we're
ahead,
on vacation Mike. A lot, so we leave it high. I think the problem with my lawn is that I really haven't done anything to it for 30 years. I've never fertilized it. I've never reseeded it. So
yeah,
maybe I'm totally guilty here.
Well, no, you're just kind of describing the conditions that allow those weeds to come in. So if you want to get rid of the creeping Charlie, the best thing for you to do would be to put down a common three-way broadleaf herbicide. Again, just like we talked about with reading a grass label, flip it over. If you can find one with triclopyr, that's the most effective ingredient against creeping Charlie. If you make that application around the time of the first frost, that's gonna be your best timing. If you still don't have the control that you anticipated, you want to do that same application when it starts putting up the purple flowers in the spring. After that, I would recommend at least one, maybe two applications of fertilizer every year, and that's going to keep that density up, which will slow the spread of the creeping Charlie in the future.
Yep.
Okay.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We should readdress that mowing height. I mean, we talk about it every single show, but people cut their lawns too low, or a lot of people do. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, there's been a switch, right? You know, back in the 50s and 60s when lawns were really catching fire, people are mowing really low, like an inch or so.
Yeah.
And now, every year, we're learning the higher you can mow that grass, the deeper the roots are going to grow. The more dense that canopy can be, it can shade out competition from weeds. You're just growing a healthier plant at a higher mowing height. So as high as you can tolerate is what we recommend.
Yeah. Jeff in Mosinee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm there.
Oh, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Go. What's your question?
I have a shady backyard that's fenced in, and I allow my dogs back there to do their thing, and I'm having a hard time maintaining the lawn. Is there any tricks or special seed, or am I just fighting the losing battle?
Yeah, this is another tough one. Different dogs have different abilities to kill grass, and some of them are really good at it with their chemistry. So, the only thing that we could recommend is following when the dog pees, to follow it up with a bucket of water or something like that to dilute it. Because basically, what you're seeing is a burning of the tissue or burning of the roots from excessive salts. So there's no, you know, you can try different grasses, but you know, I haven't heard of anything that's been a miracle for preventing that from occurring.
Patricia McConnell, who's does some work on dog training and that sort of thing, and she's a behaviorist, an animal behaviorist. She's often advocating training your dogs to go in one spot. So you find a spot in the back corner. And you train the dogs, right, if they're going to go, just go there. And you give them they can dig back there or whatever, have a little spot. And then if they go out and they always go there, then you've at least got it.
Yeah. Confined
yeah. to yeah. one spot. And she's had many clients that had pretty good success with that. So
yeah. Unfortunately, my dog ranged from 4 to 13, and I'd have to start over.
So, somebody keep an eye for the next batch. Keep that in mind for the next batch, Jeff. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, I'd say the if you want to try some new seeds, go to the local garden supplier and ask for the most salt tolerant varieties, and usually those are going to be perennial ryegrasses, which I don't like for a lot of different reasons, but it might be something that that you can give a try.
Yeah, good luck, Jeff. Jill in Rice Lake. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My son's house burned to the ground in January, and he's rebuilt on the same spot. And he'll be planting grass pretty soon. They're going to be leveling and doing all that. I'm just wondering if the ash from the fire, anything that's mixed in there, I mean, this is, you know, not a forest fire, it's a house fire. Yeah. Is that going to be a special problem for that soil? And he's on clay. So do you have some suggestions? I'm sure he'll be bringing in black dirt on top. but what else should we be aware of?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that is a problem that we do see. I mostly see it on new golf courses where they cut a path for the hole through some trees, and then what they do is they pile the trees in piles and they burn them down, and then we always have trouble growing grass near those burn piles. So I think it's a real a problem that you want to consider addressing. My recommendation would be to get, in addition to the black dirt, which is going to be critical, maybe look at getting some compost as well, and then tilling that compost in with that ash and the subsoil, and then going on with the topsoil on top of that, just to get that ash diluted and mixed in with some other components as much as possible.
Yeah, good idea.
Okay, so what would you recommend for a compost?
Usually the nearest like municipality, it's hard to know the compost availability, okay. But county programs have municipal composting. Usually you can get a truckload for like $5. It's pretty inexpensive,
right.
But you'll have to check around in Rice Lake area.
Okay, well, thank you so very much.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. And we have some open lines and get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. Dale in Palmyra, turning to you. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Hi.
Hello, what
doing,
can we
Dale?
Do for you?
Yeah, I have a lawn that has a lot of this green moss that has started to grow on. It's like a flat moss type of thing.
Yeah.
And I was curious, what can you put on your lawn to prevent that?
You have a wet and shady lawn, don't you?
No, it's a very sandy lawn. And it's very sandy, and the moss is out in the bright sand and all over, really.
That's strange.
It's in the shade. Yeah, it's in the shade, and it's, it's spotty. It's
yeah,
like
so
all over.
The silvery, yeah. It's probably silvery thread moss is my guess, and this is the same type of moss that you'll see on some on roofs of places. So silvery thread moss can grow in wet areas, it can grow in dry areas, but it can grow in full sun. Like I said, if it's growing on a rooftop, so it's a really difficult thing to outcompete. The problem you're having is that I think that you have a sandy soil coupled with the shade, and there's not a lot of grasses that like to grow in those conditions. So I think your best bet is to look for Chewing's fine fescue or hard fescue, and then till up the area, get rid of the moss just by mechanically breaking it up. And then those grasses actually have, call them allelo chemicals. They exude chemicals in the roots that discourage other plants from growing nearby them. And it's because they do well in sand and better in shade, I think those two types of grasses will help keep that moss from taking over.
What was the name of that grass again?
So Chewing's fine fescue and or hard fine fescue.
Okay.
Chewing's is like chew and inks.
Yeah.
Chew and I-N-G-S, Chewing's. I think that's how it is.
That's right, yeah.
That's what I thought. Good luck, Dale. Thanks. And John in Green Bay, hello to you.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I've been redoing the lawn in the front yard. Had a lot of sand, dug that out, put in pulverized topsoil, and then piecemeal it as I've been finishing one area, been adding sod to it. The sod that I've been buying from a local supplier comes from a place where they produce it on, they say, on mineral soil. And when they ran out, I asked them, would I be able to use sod from a different supplier just so I could finish the job? And they said, well, you want to make sure that you don't get sod. If you started with sod that was grown on mineral soil, you don't get sod that has been grown on organic soil. And is that a serious concern?
It can be. That's a hard one to say. I think there was some research done a while ago that showed that if you prepare the soil properly, it doesn't matter. But one thing that you could, those two, so organic sod is really light. It's grown on a muck or a peat soil. The mineral sod is just like the normal soil that you associate with your yard. The most important thing is that you have the soil underneath prepared properly. And if you do that, you should, the grass roots will grow down into your own soil and you should have no problem. But if that doesn't happen and for whatever reason, the organic sod won't send roots down into your soil because it's too compacted or you're overwatering or something like that, then you're going to notice that the mineral sod is probably going to outperform that organic. So just be, you can do it if that's all you can find. And just pay attention to, keeping that your lawn soil, uncompacted and healthy so that organic can start to root right into it. And eventually that organic layer is just going to mineralize and go away. So it's only in the first couple of years that you want to worry about that.
Oh, thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And Ruth and Ladysmith. Hi.
Hi. We have kind of a drought going on up here, but I would like to kill off the perennial broadleaf weeds in my yard and also the crabgrass. Is now a good time to apply those sorts of things or not?
Not quite yet. So we recommend waiting for broadleaf weed control until the first hard frost, which is usually sometime in October. Right now, so it's still, you still have high temperatures. Sometimes grasses don't react well to broadleaf weed killers in high temperatures. And also you'll have some weeds like dandelion that will continue to germinate from seed, up until that first hard frost. So if you would go out and apply now, you'd miss all the dandelions that are going to germinate in the next 6 weeks or so. So we definitely recommend waiting until about the time of that first hard frost for that broadleaf weed killer.
Okay. How about the crabgrass? Is that...
Crabgrass, we don't want to do anything about it. It's just, we're going to let the frost kill it. And next year, you'll want to consider putting down a pre-emergent crabgrass controller, either a conventional one or a non-conventional like corn gluten meal, if that's of interest to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And around the time, you want that spring application when the forsythia are in full bloom, the bright yellow bushes, or when the soil temperatures are about 50 degrees.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Doug Soldat, our guest today, he's an associate professor and UW Extension Specialist in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. He teaches, among other things, turf grass, nutrient, and water management. Talking with him about your lawn and mine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, Molly Fifield-Murray joins us from the University of Wisconsin Arboretum. She's going to talk about their upcoming native plant conference, and she has some great gardening advice to share as well. But right now, visiting with Doug Soldat about your lawn and mine, give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234. You can post on my Facebook page as well on the Larry Mueller Show. And Doug, if he may have a chance to get back to you. If we don't get it on the air, maybe he'll have a chance to answer via Facebook as well. So, Don in Spring Green, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And I'm finding out I'm doing a lot wrong, but hopefully I can get on the right track. We had put in Nomo fescue about 7 years ago on a very sandy soil area near Spring Green, and we've been pretty happy with it. But last year's drought really took a tough shot at it. We replanted, and a lot of it has come back, but part of it did not come back very well. A lot of crabgrass came up, and I've used herbicide on them already, including a couple days ago. And just want to know when would be the right time to reseed, either with Nomo, or could we use, like, a Kentucky bluegrass? And... Then the other thing is we've also put in quite a few prairie areas around our house, and if anybody is thinking of doing that, go for it, because it's a wonderful thing to do. And that's it.
All right.
Sure. Yeah, Don. So right now is the best time to reseed that area, the area with crabgrass. And the best thing to do is just bust it up with a tiller, rototiller, or by hand, depending on how big it is, and put that seed down, a little fertilizer to help it get going. But right now, this is the perfect window to reseed. As far as using Kentucky bluegrass, I don't know. I'm on the fence with that, because if you're not mowing this grass, Kentucky bluegrass is not going to be as competitive in that situation. So I think I would recommend sticking with the low mow or no mow mix that you've used in the past. You know, that drought that we had, we noticed the same thing. The fine fescue, the no mow fescues, they got whacked all over the state. But also keep in mind, we haven't had a weather event like that in 30 years. So I think you're probably good to go in and reseed now with those low mow grasses, and you should be fine. Okay, but don't wait till, you know, we start getting into mid to late September, and it's probably too late.
Okay. So the chemicals I put on would not harm the germination of the grass seed.
What did you put down?
It was sold as a crabgrass killer. It's okay for grasses, but not for crabgrass.
Yeah, probably contained quinclorac is the post-emergent crabgrass control, and you're going to be fine seeding into that right away.
Okay, great.
Thanks. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Peggy in Madison wonders if aerating the lawn is worth doing. What does it do anyway?
Yeah, it's a good question. So aerating, first of all, this is when you've seen those little soil plugs and little holes in the ground that on your lawn or the golf course or whatever. And I think it is worth doing in a lot of situations. And again, now is the right time to think about it if you're going to do it. What does it do exactly? Depending on the type of aerator, you're getting between 1 to 2, maybe if you're lucky, 3 inches of soil, and you're pulling that up. So you pull that soil to the surface, and then the holes that you left, now the ground surface will kind of collapse. Those holes will collapse, and it'll loosen the soil. So you're basically making the top 1, 2, or 3 inches better for growing roots. So I like that because, you know, if you have a lot, your dogs or your kids are running around, it alleviates some of that soil compaction. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't solve your long-term or your deeper compaction problems that exist below those top few inches. So I like to think of it as kind of a Band-Aid solution to areas that get high traffic. So if that's your situation, you start to see areas where the grass isn't growing as good as it should be, it's probably a good thing to think about doing right now. But it's definitely not something that's needed in all situations.
Jim in Green Bay. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. I've got a new lawn I put in last August or July and, kind of nurtured it along and then when I started cutting the grass, I picked up all the clippings and stuff. And then, of course, this year, been doing the same thing. I've got the lawnmower set as high as it'll go. And but I noticed that the lawn has got a kind of a yellow tint to it. I'm looking at the grass, and it's green, and then I got a bunch of gray stuff in there, and I'm wondering if I need to put. I've been putting 10-10-10 on it a couple times this year, and I'm wondering what else I should do at this point in time.
Sure. So it sounds like what kind of soil you have there, Jim?
Well, it was an old lawn to begin with, and we had a bunch of landscaping and stuff like that. So there was some clay, but they brought in dirt and filled it all up and leveled it off and then planted the grass.
Yeah. So one thing we're seeing this time of year, and I'm sure a lot of the other listeners will identify with, is a disease that we call rust. And it attacks perennial ryegrass, which is one of those grasses that we often see in new seed mixes, but we don't recommend. So what rust does is if you look really closely at some of the blades, they'll have these little tiny red dots on it, and then the plant starts to turn yellow, and that's really, you see a yellow, maybe a little bit of orangish, and that stunts the growth of that grass, and it's in the then the gray is what happens after it dies. So my guess is your perennial ryegrass is starting to be affected by that rust. The thing that we recommend to come out of it, well, first of all, what the change in the weather is going to help, but an application of a fertilizer, and we would recommend that you use a lawn fertilizer that has instead of 10-10-10, something more like 30-0-3. So a high first number, no phosphorus in the middle, and not so much potassium is going to help that grass grow through that rust. And you should, in a month or two, it should be looking much more healthy. But I'm guessing you're seeing rust on your perennial ryegrass.
Yep.
What happens when you get these guys that come in and they spray the lawn for weeds? Off these back these trucks, then you wouldn't want to use those type of people to fertilize the lawn then?
It depends. All those companies have their own type of mix. We always like to see a high component of slow release, at least 30% slow release nitrogen. So that could be a question that you ask the lawn care company is what type of fertilizer that they use. Sometimes they'll apply smaller doses that is good for stimulating the growth without over fertilizing. So it's a good question to ask the company.
Okay, so 30-0-3, that would be the combination
in that range, somewhere close to that.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. And it shouldn't be that hard to find zero phosphorus.
Yeah, that's
anymore. No, anyway.
That's actually a state. It's a state law. So if you have a new lawn, you're allowed to apply fertilizer that contains phosphorus. But in all other situations, you actually need a soil test before you can make a phosphorus application to your lawn.
Steve in Menominee Falls. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Larry. Hi, Doug. Thanks for a great show. I have trouble pronouncing that, too, sometimes. We put in a new yard in early July because June was so wet we couldn't work it all out. And the seed I put down has all died. I thought I was doing it right, and evidently I didn't. My question is, how often do you water? And my second part of the question is, there are a lot of weeds that have come into the area that I had seeded, and what do I do with those?
Yeah, so well, let me just share a story with you. I also seeded some grass in July, and it all died. So, and I had every tool available to me. So that's part of the reason is July, that we don't recommend seeding in July, is because it's a brutal time to get grass to survive, regardless of how you're irrigating. And we also see what happened with mine is the weeds just completely overtook it, and we ended up tilling it up and starting over about a week or two ago. So I think that's really what we want to do is get some seed in the ground now when it's cooler. The pressure from the weeds is a lot lower. So is the seeds not taking at all? You think you have to reseed that, or you're trying to work with it?
No, I think I have to reseed them.
Yeah.
And it's also, where it did take, it turned yellow in spite of watering, and I thought your last person who called talked about that disease, and it may even have some of that.
Yeah, the problem is seeds... the cool season grasses that we grow here in Wisconsin need the soil temperatures to be cool to survive. And soils get cooler in the summer as you go down deeper. So the deeper the rooting system, the more able that grass is to grow. If you think of a little seedling, it's just got one tiny little root and it's growing right in the surface where it's so hot. And usually that turning yellow is just a sign of physiological decline. It just cannot survive in those high temperatures when a lot of the weeds are basically engineered to thrive in those conditions.
Right. Yeah. Because some of the grass was closer to the house and it had the shade of the house in the afternoon and then it was green there.
Yep. There it is. Yep. A little bit of cooler, a little less intense sun and it'll be fine. But you get it out there in the middle, it just bakes.
Well, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Terry in Milwaukee, hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. I live in the city of Milwaukee. I'm about to tear up my entire lawn because it's just so weed infested. I want to do it organically because we have about 1,800 square feet of produce garden around the yard, And I'm wondering two questions. The best type of seed, and so at City of Milwaukee, we've primarily got clay soil, but if we put a layer of mushroom compost on before we start seeding, would that be an acceptable way to get it started organically?
Yeah, that's good. I don't really like the putting the layer down, because a lot of times grass roots will see layers and they'll grow into
that
mushroom and they'll stop. So I'm going to recommend you work that mushroom compost into the soil to reduce the occurrence of a layering. Another really good option for you to keep the weeds out is to go, and I'm not sure how big your area is or what your budget is, but if you go with a sod, a fine fescue sod, that you're going to have 100% cover from day one. Fine fescues are really good at keeping weeds from invading, and so we have a publication on the University of Wisconsin Learning Store that's called Organic and Reduced Risk Turf Management. And so one of our recommendations is, if you're going to go organic, start with a sod. It just makes the weed control a lot easier, because when you grow those seeds, that's a good time for weeds to germinate as well.
Yeah, sod's so nice. Yeah. So
it's more expensive, but you definitely get
you get a lot for your money.
You get a lot of convenience with it.
Doug Soldat, our guest. Doug is an associate professor and UW Extension specialist in the Department of Soil Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He teaches turf grass, nutrient and water management, among other things. Great to have him with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Lawns can be a frame around a home or a colorful garden, but to keep them looking good, we need to pay a lot of attention to them. Doug Soldat, for this edition of Garden Talk, our guest. And he is an associate professor and UW Extension specialist in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Great to have him along to answer your questions and mine about lawns. How did yours fare this summer? Give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And, Doug, we got an email from Tom in Green Bay. This relates to a question about protecting the lawn from dog use. In other words, the dogs peeing on the lawn. Tom says, years ago I asked our vet how he kept the lawn by the office so nice with all the animals using it before they come into the office. He said he gives it heavy doses of gypsum pellets twice a year. And Tom says, now he's been doing that for the last 10 years with great results. One year we got an early snow and I didn't get it down. And the next spring I had a lot of brown spots. So I know it works.
Yeah. So this is one of the reasons I don't have a lot of good answers, or no researchers have good answers to this, is because it's really difficult to do a controlled trial with dogs that pee on plots when you want them. So this is the best advice we have is listen to people who have stories and anecdotes about what works. So give the gypsum, if you're having dog spot problems, give the gypsum thing a try. You know, the thing we recommend to golf course superintendents when they want to assess something on their own, is say use the plywood trick. Grab a sheet of plywood, put it down, then make your treatment application, and you'll know where that plywood was. You know, if the treatment worked, when you pull that plywood up that didn't get the product, you should be able to see a difference. If you don't see a difference, maybe nothing happened. So when you're doing these trials, it's good to have a control plot in there. So if you got a little scientific bone in you, you might want to give that a shot.
All right,
but good suggestion there.
Wayne in River Falls. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I was wondering about some starter fertilizer. I'm putting a lawn down, and I went up to our local Fleet Farm in Hudson, and they said they can't sell the regular starter fertilizer anymore. The best you can do is a 10-10-10. Do you know if that's universal or what?
Yeah, I don't recommend the 10-10-10 because it's not formulated for turf. The starter... the information he got was wrong. They can stock and sell starter fertilizer, but the state laws make it such that it's too cumbersome, so they don't. So you should be able to go if you can find a garden center, a little bit more specialty than one of those big stores. They're going to have starter fertilizers for lawns, and the best one is going to be. It's going to have maybe 10% nitrogen and about 20 to 30% phosphorus, and then maybe another.
The middle number you want higher.
You want the middle number higher than the others
for a new lawn.
And if it's better for a new lawn, exactly. And if it's better if it's if the fertilizer is formulated specifically for lawns, because then usually the nitrogen has a slow release component to it as well, and the particle size is good for the lawn. But I would stay away from the 10-10-10 if you can.
Okay, so I bought about 4 bags of the stuff, and I suppose I'm going to have to use it for our little garden rather than a big lawn. So
yeah, that'll work.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. And David in Wauwatosa. Hello.
Hi there.
What's on your mind?
Well, in my front yard, I had a huge evergreen, like a blue spruce kind of tree, and it died, and we took it down, and I've got this big 30-plus area now, big circle in my yard that I have seeded over. It's been like 2 seasons now, and that grass just won't grow anywhere close to what the other grass did. It's like there's a soil issue there that I just don't know what it needs. It just doesn't come up very well.
Yeah, so when you dig in that spot, is a bunch of needles and organic matter? Is it different than the lawn outside of the spot?
No, I pretty much raked off. Well, there might be quite a few needles that were left over in there, but I tried to rake a lot of them up. They were very small.
What I would recommend is actually, this is a good opportunity to get a soil test if you haven't done that. So take there's University of Wisconsin has a state soil testing lab that will tell you the pH and the phosphorus and potassium in the soil, and I'm guessing this might be related to pH, and if it is, they'll tell you the amount of lime that you'll want to add to that area. But you know, you're in Wauwatosa, so pH might not be the issue, but that's where I'd start. And then
be sure to tell them what you're planning to do with that spot, that it's going to be lawn, because then they'll make recommendations based on what you want to do with it.
Right.
Okay.
And also always send in the good spot and the bad spot, so you have something to compare it with.
Oh, okay. 2 samples. Good. And, okay.
Yep. And if you have any questions, feel free to follow up with me.
Okay.
After
that.
Thank
you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, David. Appreciate the call. And Larry in Sun Prairie is next. Hi, Larry.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Typically, every year, I always have like a lawn service come out, and they spray whatever they spray on the lawn. And this year, I didn't do that with the good intent of doing it all myself. And as a good human, I procrastinated far enough that I didn't do anything. And so now I'm wondering what and when should I apply to my yard? Because I do have some weeds. I mean, the grass looks pretty decent, but I do have some weeds, so I'm not sure what I put down and when I put it down.
Well, keep procrastinating. You're on the right track. It's still too early. I would recommend using, if there's only a handful of weeds, you can get by with spot treatment of a three-way, usually called three-way broadleaf weed control. If they're everywhere, you want to do more of a broadcast application, but you don't want to start that application until sometime in October, right about the time of the first frost. If you do it now, you might harm the grass, which doesn't react really well to herbicides in warm weather. And also in the next 6 weeks, weeds will continue to germinate. So you might as well wait until that process is near the tail end. So sometime in October is really the best time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And is there any magic cure for crabgrass yet?
Frost.
Yeah.
So
once you get rid of it in a hurry,
crabgrass, you have a very short window to control it. Once it gets a foothold, there's almost nothing you can do. So you're going to have to just live with it. And next spring, if you have thin areas where the crabgrass was, you're going to want to put down a crabgrass preventer. And then there's also, if you do get some crabgrass, you start to see these really bright green seedlings that came up after that. You'll want to address that as soon as possible. But once those crabgrass plants get big, basically you have to wait to the frost for them to go away.
Yeah.
Right. All right. That's what I thought. All right. I appreciate the calls.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Mark in Green Bay recalled from a previous show that there's now a chemical remedy for quackgrass, but it's not available to the general public. And he wonders, how do you go about locating a certified applicator? And does that chemical really work? He's also a little worried about his dog.
Yeah, the plot thickens on this one, and great memory about this. So there used to be a product called Certainty.
Yes, that was it.
It's an herbicide that will selectively, which means it won't hurt the other grass, kill quackgrass. And about a year ago, maybe a little bit longer, the company that manufactures Certainty decided to say, you can't use this in the north anymore. Because it was actually, if you misapplied it even a little bit, it would kill the entire lawn. So Certainty is basically not available in Wisconsin anymore from the first time we had it. There is another product, though, that's called Tenacity. I don't know, all these products end in city here, but Tenacity is available to certified applicators, and it will have some activity on quackgrass. It's not going to be, and it takes repeated applications every 2 weeks, so it's probably not a realistic option for you at this point. So I think, unfortunately, we're back at the point where if you have quackgrass, one of the best options is to use Roundup and eradicate the area. Let the quackgrass grow up, because Roundup won't kill it all the first time. Spray Roundup again. Do that process basically for the better part of a year. So it's quackgrass is absolutely one of the worst and most tenacious weeds in Wisconsin, and we don't really have a good selective control for it anymore.
Yeah. Facebook question from Jennifer. If my lawn has had no care for over 10 years, do I need to rototill what's there before planting new seeds to expose the ground? Should I till in compost? How hard is this to do? I've got no mow lawn seed after listening to an interview I did with a prairie expert.
Sure, Neil.
Yeah, Neil.
Yeah, not necessarily. A lot of it depends on what type of soil you have. And if your soil's decent, you'll be amazed at what a couple properly timed applications of herbicide would be like in October, and then fertilize it in around Memorial Day. Maybe an organic fertilizer sometime in the middle of the year, and then again on Labor Day. And so you could fertilize right about now too. And a couple applications of that fertilizer will help that grass outcompete the weeds, and the herbicide will take care of it. So I would actually try that first. If you're not getting the response you want, then you could consider fixing the soil by tilling in some compost and putting in some of those low mow grasses that you have.
Eric in Richland Center. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I guess I'd like to tell you a little about my lawn. I have an acre of lawn, and, it has a lot of different things in it, like dandelions and clover and plantain and quackgrass and creeping charlie, and, in the shady spot that has moss. And I guess, I don't see this as a problem, and I never fertilize it, and I never put any herbicides on it. And I guess I'm just wondering what is your standard of excellence, or what are your expectations for your lawn?
Yeah, that's great. You know what my standard is? My standard is what your standard is. So you hit the nail right on the head. First of all, the definition of turf. This is what, I'm getting ready for class. We teach this. It's the first day of Introduction to Turfgrass Management. A turf is something that can persist under constant defoliation, or is a contiguous community of plants that persists under constant defoliation. And so there's nothing about grass or lawn or Kentucky bluegrass in that. So clover can form a turf. All the things in your lawn, you have a turf. And as long as you're satisfied with that, That's great. So some people have a different standard, and we work to give them the best recommendations for that standard. But it's definitely not my job to set what that standard is.
Yeah. I'm thinking about our lawn, which looks, it sounds a lot like Eric's lawn now. It didn't start out that way, but you know what? We've got my daughter and the neighbor kids. It's the biggest lawn in the neighborhood. So, and there's a two-car garage with a kind of a wide concrete area with a basketball hoop. So they can play soccer there on the lawn, and they can tear around on the lawn, and they can play basketball right next to it. And so, having it look really good isn't a high priority. Yeah. Just having grass or something there is probably a little higher for us.
Yeah. Right. And they also hit on something there. You want to think about what the function of the lawn is.
Yeah.
And so some areas you got a soccer game going on constantly during the daylight hours, you're going to need a lot of input and a lot of work to keep that turf area performing fine. If you have an acre that you're just looking out over the back, or you just want it to look nice at 55, there's a lot of different ways to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Eric, for calling. Tim in Douglas County. Hello, Tim. Are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Trefoil.
Uh-oh.
What do you do to get rid of it?
What do you do to get rid of trefoil? Bird's foot trefoil is a really aggressive, well-adapted plant that's a component that the DOT uses in their roadside mixes, because it takes nitrogen from the air, so it does well in low fertility situations, does really good in drought. It persists in a lot of different situations. So it's a tough one to get rid of. The best timing, it's a broadleaf weed. The best timing for control is going to be in around the time of the first frost with a standard three-way product. But the reason it's there is because the area that it's growing in is probably low maintenance and under a lot of those stresses that the trefoil does well in, and the grass struggles to survive.
Well, it starts on the edge of your driveway, and then all of a sudden, I got 10 acres I mow. And then pretty soon, it's going farther and farther and farther. And I got some places, not my yard, but to some places, these fields out here, it's nothing but yellow here now this time of year.
It's really covered. Tenacious. And I think actually DOT and some other places are considering taking it out of their mix because of that tendency for it to become maybe too aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I got another question about, I live on the north side of the hill here. It's a big steep hill that goes down to Lake Superior. But anyway, what do I put into, I got ditches, some ditch, waterway ditches. What do I put in there to keep the soil from washing away?
To keep it stabilized.
Yeah.
Does ice accumulate in those ditches, or is it sloped enough where it stays pretty dry?
Stays pretty dry.
No, it flows. That's the trouble. It flows so fast that we just had about an inch and a half rain here. I had tilled up one ditch to get it so it would go better. But yeah, I just lost the whole. I lost about 100 yards of topsoil because I had tilled it up before. I hadn't had a chance to put grass in it. But I want to put something in there that's going to hold that soil.
Yeah, I think you might want to consider, I'm not sure. There's probably some forage grasses mixtures out there that are going to be better than any of these lawn grasses that we've been talking about so much today. So I guess I would talk to some of the neighbors or your county extension agent might have a much better recommendation for grass waterways than I'm going to have with my knowledge of the lawn type grasses. So I would say get in contact with your University of Wisconsin Extension County agent and ask that same question. They're going to give you a better answer than I would.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Denise in Lamira. Hi.
Hi there. My question is about weed and feed. When I look at the bags, they all want to kill, like, everything but the grass. And I have clover and some violets and stuff in mine that I don't want killed. Is there something I can use
that just for dandelions and the ugly grasses?
Well, the violets probably won't die anyway.
No matter what you do there. Now, you know what? Probably the best approach for this situation is to use spot spraying to the biggest extent you can. Is that possible?
Sure.
Yeah, so just take, you know, there's a couple different ways you can do it, but basically just put the herbicide on the plants that you want to go away on the dandelions and just avoid it, keep it off the clover. So there's not a heck of a lot of products out there that will kill one broadleaf but not another. So, and clover is actually pretty sensitive to a lot of them.
Can
so
you suggest something?
I would be spot spraying, picking and choosing what you want.
Can you suggest a spot spray?
The typical 3-way broadleaf herbicides, they tend to contain the same 3 or 4 different mixtures that are formulated to have a broad spectrum. So there's not a lot of...
triclopyr?
Yeah, triclopyr is better for ground ivy, but the 2,4-D, MCP, dicamba are usually
the three
main ones. So yeah. And that'll work. Liquid applications are a lot more effective than the weed and feed. So you'll probably want to go liquid with the spot spraying option.
There you
All
go.
Right. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. An email from Christy in Potosi, down southwest Wisconsin. She covered a large area of badly deteriorated lawn with black plastic for the entire summer. When should she take the plastic off, till and seed, and any other advice to make this venture successful?
I think it's ready to go right now, Christy. Yeah. I mean, you could take the approach of going through that for another year, but keeping that plastic on for that long, I would think has killed a lot of the seeds that have germinated. So, you know, you're right. This is the perfect weekend, this weekend, next weekend, to go ahead and do that. So take off the plastic right now, till it up, mix in some compost if you can, because you always want to think about why did this grass die, why and not somewhere else? Why was this portion of the lawn specifically the problem? It's usually not related to the grass. It's usually something underneath. So if you can till in some compost from Dane County Municipal, which is not too far down the road from you, and then put down your seed mix, starter fertilizer, mulch it, and then make sure you keep it irrigated once to twice, or probably twice a day at least, for the next 3-4 weeks, and you should be off to a good start.
Doug, while I'm thinking about it, a lot of people have the idea that if they should cut their lawns very low, you know, late in the fall. I never saw the advantage of it. You don't recommend it, do you?
No, we don't. You know, what it's going to do, the people that mow their lawns really low in the fall, the benefit that they're getting out of that is in the spring, they're going to have less brown, dead leaves on their lawn, and it's probably going to green up a little faster. So that's the benefit of it, and that's why it's been a practice. The reason we don't recommend it is because you increase the weed pressure. So if you shave it down like that, you're exposing the canopy. There's more light penetration. The weed seeds that are in can start germinating. The crabgrass can come up stronger. So for that reason, we tend to recommend that you just leave the grass at whatever height you mowed it all year and just wait the extra week or two that it takes for your grass to green up in the spring.
Doug, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. I look forward to your next visit.
Awesome. Thanks, Larry.
Doug Soldat, Associate Professor in the Department of Soil Science at the UW-Madison and UW Extension. We'll have him back and we'll do it again. Monday at 11, join us for Labor Day Birdwatching Program. Noel Cutright and Bill Volkert will be joining Judith for that. Talk about what triggers the fall migration, among other things. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.